Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, Jim, you can do this. Just remember those three S's, star, smile, strong. You ready to go? All right. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Right here at WGNplus.com. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com. And don't forget my landing page, because of course you can go on there and find all the previous 111 episodes, because this is episode 112. Wow. Or is it? No. What am I saying? This is 113. If I don't get that count right, then who will? That's right, because don't forget, folks, if you listened a few podcasts ago, there is that mysterious episode 109 that we don't know anything about. It's kind of like Prince's Black Album or some of these mysterious recordings that are in the vaults of some of our favorite artists that never got released. Episode 109 is that. For Elton Jim podcast listeners, where is episode 109, and will it ever surface for the public? We don't know. But as it stands right now, we are at 113. And that is what we are doing right now. So, I wanted to touch base on a couple of issues today. The first being, I don't know about you, if you've listened with any regularity, especially to this podcast, you know that over the last couple of years, especially last summer, last year, I went through a major decluttering process, getting rid of a lot of junk and things that I had accumulated, and my wife had, mostly me, yes, I'll admit that. for the purposes of accuracy, but when I'm telling the story, you'll understand it's mostly me. And so last summer I went through a major decluttering process, and I believe from now on I am always in declutter mode. But it started about 2 or 3 years ago. In an initial early phase, but it really kicked in last summer, and I just decluttered around the entire house from top to bottom and garage, even things in our personal life, consolidated different bank accounts and checking accounts all into one, and different things we had, you know, when we made a will. I just got everything in order. And it wasn't anything macabre in terms of the will, but, you know, my wife and I are middle-aged now, and it's just us two. And so, you know, when we do travel a lot, you never know, an accident can happen. So just got all those things, in quotes, that you're supposed to get done, that we sometimes put off. And one of the things we always put off is cleaning up and decluttering, throwing away things that we have accumulated over the years. And so I went on a major decluttering all of 2017. And as I said, now things are much easier because now you just can throw things away one at a time. You don't have to go through these major processes. I mean, this took several months. I probably got rid of maybe 30-some, almost 40 bins that translated into almost or more than 50 bags of garbage. And tidied up the basement, as I said, for the first time since we lived in our home, which is almost 20 years now, our basement, which is mostly storage. It's not fixed. It's got the utility, you know, the appliances, the utilities down here for washing and drying and things like that and storing things. But we're not storing as much as we were. That's for sure. The bins have been significantly eliminated to a very workable number here. And as well as some of the Christmas bins, I've got 15 bins of Christmas stuff that I sort of went through and decluttered. And of course, I've got all my Elton stuff, and there are some things. I haven't thrown everything away, but I certainly made it more manageable. And so now, as I said, the view that I always have is, that was one of my dad's old adages, is if you buy something, you throw the old one out. If you add, you subtract. And that's what I've been doing, and it makes life a lot easier, and don't have to go through all these massive bags of garbage and this time consuming thing. Now, once you do that big purge, and you have to do it, but once you do that big purge, then you're in good shape. Then it's really easy. So I went through one of those last year, and so one of the things that that I found were all these videotapes, these VHS tapes. And a lot of them were, you know, pre-recorded movies. And, you know, I don't have a VHS player anymore. I thought I did. We had one here in the basement, but when I plugged it in, it started to eat the tapes. And thank God I picked a tape that was not of any significance or didn't have anything special on it in terms of a recorded tape of my own, because it ate the tape up in 2 seconds. And so I said, well, I don't know how to get this fixed, and this is really a dead technology. And so I got rid of the VHS player, but I did keep many of my own home tapes of things that had special memories that we had videotaped, especially in the 80s when the video recorder became into its own. And now, of course, people are recording on their phones. But if you remember, back in the early 80s, the first video cameras came out. They were big, hulking things, much almost like cameras that TV cameramen use. And then they started getting smaller and smaller, and they were the camcorders, and they fit right in your palm of your hand. And now, of course, everybody is video recording on their phones. Talk about in the palm of your hands. But throughout my career, I have been on television on several occasions on different types of shows. Dating back to college, when I had an internship locally here in the Chicago area at a cable company called Continental Cablevision at the time, and I was producing a television show there and even appearing on it once or twice a week. The show was called Teenage. It was hosted by a woman named Nicolette Ferry. So if anybody in the area lived in the Elmhurst area or in the western suburbs and remembers Continental Cablevision and this local show called Teenage in the mid to late 80s, you remember that I was on there. And as I said, I helped produce it as well for about 6 or 8 months. So I had a lot of tapes from there and some other tapes of appearing on different TV shows throughout the last couple of decades, which I kept all those tapes. Obviously, I taped them when I was on. And then I had some personal ones. Back in the mid-90s, I never owned a camcorder per se. I always borrowed one. I didn't record all that much. But one of the things I'm so glad I did was a couple of events that that I did tape record. I tape recorded my dad's 65th birthday party that we had, which was pretty cool because I did a This Is Your Life skit. And I had members of our family also participate. If you remember the show This Is Our Life, they would choose a celebrity and then they would pick people. They would get people from that person's past to come out, like former teachers and former friends that maybe this person hadn't seen in a while, and bring them out, and it was always fun. So I did a takeoff on that for my dad's 65th birthday, and members of the family either pretended to be certain people from my dad's past, fictitious or real, and it was a fun time. And not only that, for the moment was it fun, but then you talk about a memory. Because now I found that tape. Of course, I wasn't able to watch it because I didn't have a VHS player to play the tape, but I certainly remember it was on there. And the whole point of this is that I got a lot of these tapes transferred to DVD. And when I saw this 65th party, it was not only a great memory of the moment, but as I looked at the party, and this happened at this point, you know, over 20 years ago, not only has my dad passed away since then, but several members of my family have passed away since then. And so it was a nice time capsule and document to see members of my family that I hadn't seen and have those memories of them, not just photos, but actual video of them talking and laughing and just living life. Kind of an unexpected memory there. And then another thing I did that at that same time, this was not because anybody was sick or in the fear of passing away, but I interviewed my mom about her life on the video and asked her a lot of questions of when she was growing up as a little girl and in her career and things like that and family facts. And once again, my mom passed away about 13 years ago this year. And so I have this document of her from the mid 90s when is still, in great health and just she looks great. And it was my mom. It was her as I remember her. Not in any kind of ill health, and I'm interviewing her, and she's explaining different things and telling me things that I never knew. So informationally, it was a valuable piece of videotape. But now, once again, it's become a very cherished memory because there's my mom in all her glory. Lori in her glory, if you will. My mom's name was Lorraine. And I have that forever saved. Our wedding, my wife... and our wedding was on VHS tape. It was in the early 90s, and so that, is now on DVD. Another great memory, once again, not only of the day, but of people that were either in your life at that time. Some of them haven't seen some of those people in 20 years or 30 years as we get older and older. And once again, many of the people at that wedding have now passed away, so there's a document of them having a good time and in all their vibrancy. So, yeah, these memories that you had on VHS tape, the tape gets old. The tape, especially on over 20 or 30 years, if they're not stored correctly, the tape could actually get sticky and not even be able to be used. As I said, the VHS player that I had started eating up the tapes. I don't know if it was the player itself or the tapes themselves that were old. But as soon as I saw that one get eaten up, I decided I need to not only save these personal tapes that were important that have so many memories on them, but then also I had to get them quick transferred to DVD. And I don't know how long DVDs will last, but at least I have them now digitally safe and can always convert them to another file or something else as technology continues to move ahead. And let's not forget, some of these tapes I had go back to the mid-80s, and I initially had a Beta machine. If anybody remembers what that is, there were two formats when the videotape cassette first was released to the public in a mass release for commercial purchase in the mid-80s, early 80s, and... I had a Beta player first, as did many people, because Beta was the first thing out there. And even when VHS came out as a competing technology, the Beta was considered better in terms of quality because the tapes were shorter and thinner. I don't know if the tapes were thinner or thicker, but they were shorter, and so more information could be put on the tapes, and so the quality looked better. But the people that invented VHS were smarter, even though the tapes were bigger physically. They also held a lot more on each blank tape. So whereas a Beta tape initially only held 2 hours of programming for you to tape, because that was a big thing. Certainly, there were pre-recorded tapes back in the 80s that you rented or you bought in terms of old movies and things like that. But the big lure initially was the idea that now we take for granted with a DVR of taping shows. And or like I said, you know, videotaping, you know, moments from your life, but mostly, you know, videotaping television shows. We didn't even know what time shifting was at that time. We were doing it. We didn't have a name for it. Now we're time shifting. I taped it on Monday. I'll watch it next Friday. And we were starting to do that. It was an amazing ability to do that because I said for so many years, if ever. And now suddenly with the VHS or beta recorder, you were able to keep these forever. As I said, I had many, many tapes of personal things as well as older TV shows or things like that that I taped from TV. So that was a big deal. So I not only had VHS tapes, I had some beta tapes that things were on that I needed to transfer onto a DVD. And that was even harder because there's not even a lot of people that have beta machines to play in order to transfer it to a DVD. They're hard to find, and many of them don't work, and it's hard to find parts for them. I mean, those machines are more than 30-some years old now. And once again, you know, I didn't have these tapes stored in a cool place, in optimum, conditions. But I guess I did, to be honest with you. I didn't do it on purpose. I just had them always in a basement, which is cooler. And so, thankfully, all the tapes were in fairly good shape, despite their age, many of them being, you know, and some of them more than 35 years old, and some of them only 15 or even 10 years old. So they varied in age, but thankfully, all the tapes that I wanted to get transferred, and I think there may even still be a few more that I have to dig around for that I still haven't found yet. But for the most part, once again, if you're going to start going through things, and you have some of these VHS tapes, hopefully, or betas, hopefully you mark them. I always mark them. I'm very anal when it comes to that. You know, I like making lists, and I also like marking my videotapes so I know what was on what tape. And thankfully, I did that. And so I found most of those tapes that I wanted to find. And sure enough, thankfully, I had a friend, and once again, all this stuff ties in, folks. When you listen to my stories, all the facts are thrown out there for a reason, because there are dotted line connections, and there are little callbacks to things. So if you remember, I said how I worked and had an internship and worked at Continental Cablevision in Elmhurst for about 6 or 8 months in the mid-80s after I graduated from college, and sure enough, thank you to the internet. You can't thank the internet enough sometimes. I know I talk with harsh words about technology and what it's doing to our behavior. In effect, we'll talk about that a little later in this podcast. But once again, thanks to the internet. I was able to find a friend who I worked with way back when at Continental Cable, who was an engineering type, a behind-the-scenes guy, like a camera guy, and an engineering type. He was way into the technology of the day. And he, in his spare time, you know, he rehabs these old machines, and he does transferring, and he does it as a business. Because, as I said, a lot of people are finding these tapes, and with the age of them, it is important, as quick as you can, to get those things transferred to DVD or any other file digitally before those tapes either disintegrate or get mushy or sticky or not usable anymore. Or once again, before you can't use those old machines anymore, VHS tapes or VHS machines or beta tapes, as my friend was saying. The beta machine that he used to transfer my beta tapes, he had to warm it up for like a half hour because, you know, the parts are so old. So I'm not only telling you as a little advice here to once again cherish your memories and try to find your memories wherever they may be stored, but what I'm really telling you with a sense of urgency, because I know from firsthand experience now, is if you have those VHS or those beta tapes that have some special moments, parties, vacations, whatever it may be from your life, get those transferred as quick as you can. because the old technologies and the machines to help you do that are now becoming scarce. And you may have the best intentions, but once those machines are gone, you will not, those tapes are worthless. At least old pictures, you can always look at them. So if you have the old pictures in a photo album, that's great. But these tapes need to be played on a machine, and those old machines might not be around much longer because of their age and the difficulty to get parts if they do break. So if you've got some VHS or beta tapes from your past that hold some really important memories from your life, and you've always been saying, well, I have to get those transferred one day, hey, make that a priority. Put that on your daily list. And you can go online and find it. I actually, about 2 or 3 years ago, you know, found a service and paid. And it can be expensive. Don't get me wrong. But once again, you know, what price are you willing to pay for your memories, right? I don't think there's any price that's too high. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, once again, you want to get that done when you can. And then I was lucky enough to find this friend through the internet who listened to my radio show, and we touched base, which was really cool. And then he told me that, you know, he collects old tapes of things. Because, like I said, he's kind of aficionado. He loves old television shows and things. So he has these tapes or these machines to make those transfers. And so I was able to give him several of these VHS tapes and beta tapes that I thankfully found last year and had those transferred. So now at least I have those digitally transferred, and now I can at least have those until hopefully we'll see how long the DVDs last and how long those technologies are. But at least digital is a little better than the analog type of technologies of the past in terms of preserving them and time not wreaking havoc on them physically, because once again, tape can disintegrate. Or tape can get mushy and stick together, which I never even knew about. So yeah, it was kind of cool because one of these tapes, I just had them labeled, but I hadn't seen them in 20 years or so or more, because I haven't played them. Where nobody has a VHS player in their upstairs, you know, wherever they're at in their homes anymore. I mean, that's old technology. It's like having a Model T in your garage. You know, how many times do you use it? But thankfully, those were all marked, and so I gave them all these tapes, and they all were able to be transferred. And it was so cool, because as I said, there's pictures and moments with my parents, which now are invaluable to me, as they have both passed away. My dad 13 years ago, my mom actually will be 12. My dad is 13 years this year, my mom will be 12 years that they've passed away. Our wedding, like I said, the TV things that I had been on, various shows. I played baseball in high school, and about 5 years after we graduated or so, maybe even more than that, really, now 5 or 6 years, we had a reunion baseball game of all of our teams, and we got together and played. And even that now is 30 years old, and it's amazing to watch that. And I had the wherewithal to videotape that, because I knew that would be a great memory. And what else? Oh, and when I was in high school, as one of the projects, we had to make a movie. And this is early 80s, and thankfully one of my friends, who is still one of my best friends, if not my best friend, and is my godson's father, his brother was into technology, and his family, they had one of the early camcorders or VHS recorders. As I said, it was a hulking machine. You carried it on your shoulder. And so my friend Pat's brother Bill was our cameraman, because we made a film for one of our classes in high school, and it was kind of a takeoff on The Godfather. And so here we are in our late teens once again with many of my friends who I still see today. And we are like 17 or 18 years old. Once again, amazing memories and amazing capsules, time capsules and moments in time that are frozen forever that we only have in our memories. But thankfully, had them on those tapes, and I found them, and I got those transferred. And I'm going to show my friend has. We haven't seen this tape in 20 or 30 years. And so I'm going to look forward to having a party with many of the people in that movie. and showing it. It's only about 10 or 15 minutes long, but it's pretty funny. But just to see us at that time in our lives, when I saw it, when I watched some of these DVDs, oh my gosh, I mean, it was just, you get goosebumps because you just remember those moments. And I was on the Bozo Show with my godson when he was about maybe 9 or 10 years old. And he didn't play the grand prize game or anything, but we did go to the Bozo Show. And every so often, as they panned the camera across the audience, you can see us there. And so that was a great memory. And so I've got that Bozo Show, and Patrick and I, who now every so often is on the Millennial Meter segment with me here on the podcast, as well as on the radio sometimes. But there's me and Patrick when he was 9 years old at Bozo. Once again, an amazing memory that could never be duplicated. And thankfully, I have it there. I was on a TV show in the 80s. I'm a big, huge Honeymooners fan. And there was a show that Channel 32 showed the Honeymooners here in the 80s, and they did a special kind of Honeymooners tribute show. And I was a member of the fan club, and they contacted all the members of this national fan club who lived in Chicago and went down there for a day and taped an episode or several episodes that ran for a week during the national Republican or Democratic convention, one of the political conventions that was kind of counter-programming. And they gave us Andy Frayne jackets. If you remember the Andy Frayne ushers, who used to wear these blue jackets with the yellow fringe. And they gave us raccoon hats, and they actually did these little vignettes of us in black and white at the Raccoon Lodge. And there's a couple of times where the camera, you know, focuses right in on me, which is great. So I've got that memory, which I literally have not seen in 35 years. Now I think back, probably 15 years or so, at least, almost. I went skydiving, and back then in the early 2000s, once again, DVDs were just relatively new. They gave you a VHS tape of you can buy it extra, obviously, but they gave you your jump on a VHS tape, and I saved that, and thankfully I have my skydiving jump. So I'm saying, folks, some of these tapes are irreplaceable and special memories and moments. I had an internship at Channel 2 here in Chicago when I was in college, and when Jackie Gleason died, in fact, because the people at Channel 2 knew Channel 2 News. I had an internship in the news department, and people knew that I was a big Honeymooner fan because I would talk about it all the time. And at that time, Jackie Gleason was in town to film his last film before he passed away. Nothing in Common with Tom Hanks, and I was lucky enough to be able to go out on the interview that Channel 2 was doing, and I had a chance to meet Jackie Gleason, and although that is not taped, when he passed away, I was on the Channel 2 News as a Honeymooners aficionado, and I was interviewed by Gene Siskel, and it was I was 23, 24 years old. And so I've got that memory, and thank God I found that. And that was on a beta tape, and thankfully it was it was still in good shape. But I'm being, interviewed by Gene Siskel, who at that time was certainly popular, but went on to, national and international prominence later, with he and Roger Ebert. He was certainly popular at that time, but once again, Gene Siskel has passed away now many years, and so not only was it a thrill to be on that show, but then to be interviewed by someone like Gene Siskel and have a document of that. So I have to tell you, folks, I can't stress enough that if you have, these tapes and these things in your collection, by all means, find them and get them transferred, because they are memories that you may have, and there are memories that you do have documented, but the technologies and the machines and the tapes themselves do have a shelf life. There is an expiration on those. And so make that a priority to get those transferred, because believe me, I have now a stack of maybe 7 or 8, 10 DVDs with some of these things, and they have just brought back some special memories that I can now go to and watch that may have been lost forever. So please, in two lessons here today. One, declutter, and B, some of those things aren't necessarily clutter. They're really special memories. And it's Jim Toronto here back at Captain Podtastic. Another thing I wanted to talk about today. As you know, I oftentimes have become a critic of how technology is in many ways certainly helping us, but the iPhone has really become more of an addiction in many cases. Everybody with the selfies, everybody documenting everything. We talked the last podcast about, you know, Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson, the celebrity couple. At every moment, they're documenting their red-hot, wild summer romance here to the point of ad nauseum, if you will. And I've been saying how it's amazing how the iPhone, if you think about it, it's only, 11 years old. The iPhone is only 11 years old, the smartphone, as an invention, and has completely revolutionized our society, and more than revolutionized it, it's completely changed our behavior. And oftentimes I will say that I don't know if it's necessarily changed our behavior for the better or not, because everybody's head now is down in their phones. As I said before, everybody is documenting every piece of little minutia of their lives. People are texting here and there. We're seeing more accidents. We're seeing people be distracted. People, don't kid yourself, because you have to put yourself in this too, not just others. Don't kid yourself, and don't let other people kid you about your ability or their ability to multitask. I've got news for you. Very few of us can multitask well. Yes, you can do two things at one time, but are you doing either of those things to their optimum performance? Probably not. And we've seen it firsthand. Do you notice how many times there are mistakes being made? Because people are distracted. Obviously, we see it on the road now. Half the time, if you're on a highway or even in regular traffic, you know, sometimes it's on an off time. You say, why is traffic so busy? And then you realize there's no stoppage. Especially on the highway, there's no reason for the stoppage. There's no reason for people driving slower. There's no accident on the side. There's no construction. Why is everybody driving so slow? And more times than not, especially at a red light, or many times, sadly, and frightening on the highway, people have their heads down and are texting. So no, they're not multitasking, because they're not driving at optimum performance. And as I said, and to be distracted while you're driving, people are bad enough drivers when they're paying attention. Now add distraction in, and we've seen this already happening. This is nothing new. I'm not pointing out any great revelation here, but I am saying that things are getting worse and worse, and we are seeing mistakes being made due to the cell phone. And maybe these aren't earth-shattering mistakes yet or now, but they are mistakes about people being distracted, and they add up, and suddenly, and one day there will be a major event or a major tragedy that is due to distraction because of the cell phone. We all saw this a couple years ago. Once again, I'm not saying it's earth-shattering, but it is symptomatic of the problem I'm talking about. At the Oscars, the guy's job, one of the accountants' job, his only job there, and they make such a big deal about it, they make jokes about the guys, you know, the accounting firm, and they come out with the bag, you know, with the briefcases, and they're here to make sure that everything is on the up and up, and we have, Price Waterhouse to make sure that everything is right. And if you remember, the man whose job it was to give the envelope, the last envelope of the evening for Best Picture, the one that everybody's been waiting for 4.5 hours, and he screwed up and gave him the wrong envelope. Why? Because he was taking selfies and taking pictures of himself backstage to share on his social media pages. Do your job. You can't multitask. You're not supposed to be multitasking. Do your job. And we're seeing more and more. There's little things. But my fear is that these little things are going to grow into big things. And one day, there's going to be a catastrophe, and it's going to come down to human error, as most things are, because we are flawed human beings. And we're going to find out that this major catastrophe could have been averted, but because somebody was distracted with their cell phone, they made a mistake. I hate to be, you know, but I'm doing this for our own sake. People are getting addicted to this stuff. And we're seeing this happen on a daily basis. This is not a knock against you or anyone else. You can't multitask. One at a time. Do one thing really well. Don't do three things crappy. And especially if you're driving. Come on, there's safety involved here, folks. But we all think, oh, I can multitask. No, you can't. You can barely do one thing well, not two, and certainly not three. And so I've been screaming in the woods on this because everybody looks at me like, oh, Jim, you're so outdated and you're horse and buggy. And I've been saying as I said many times in this podcast and on the radio, I observe people in groups and everybody's head is down. I go to the airport, I'm reading a paper or a magazine, or I'm talking to the people I'm with, and I look around and everybody's just got their heads down. Went to the baseball game recently. Go to a baseball game. Nobody's watching the game. There's this beautiful pastoral game happening, especially if you go to a place like Wrigley Field with the vines and the sunshine and the park and the atmosphere and the rooftops in the back. And it's got this beautiful thing. And everybody has got their head down on their phone. They're not watching the game. Or if they're watching the game, instead of looking at it as it sits in front of you, they're looking at it through a phone. Hello, and they're making videos. Everybody's videotaping everything. These videotapes that no one, they're not video anymore. They're recording these things that they will never watch, but they're documenting everything, and they're never watching them again. I got news for you. Lift your eyes up. Experience it. Don't worry about documenting everything. I just talked about documenting things. Yeah, these special once in a lifetime moments, but not the minutia of your life. Experience the minutia of your life. You don't have to document it for something you're never going to see. Yes, if you've got a birthday party or a wedding or something, I can understand that. But my gosh, walking, I'm jogging, and here's a videotape of me jogging. I'm in my car. I'm taking pictures of my food. I've seen people, you know, at concerts. You know, I go to concerts. I'll take a picture here and there, but I'm not videotaping. I'm not having my phone up or recording. I'm not having my phone up for the whole show. And rock stars and performers are really going crazy because when they look out in the audience, all they're seeing are phones. They're not making connections. They're making eye contact with anybody anymore. Nobody is looking at events with their eyes anymore. They're watching the events that are right in front of them, unfolding right in front of them, and they're documenting them on their phones, and they never even go back to watch it. That's even the worst part. As I said, at least these things that were on these VHS tapes were special moments that I did videotape and record for the reason that I would go back and watch them one day, and now I'm able to do that. But most people are recording for the sake of recording. They're not even going back and watching these, and they're not experiencing them live. In the moment, they're not making human connections. They are addicted to phones. I've got a flip phone. I've told you that, and more people are seeing my flip phone, and I'm not on some big crusade. I'm just saying, I don't think I need it. I make a joke how I've got Tetris and bowling on my flip phone. I almost have too many apps on it. You know, I'm making a joke there. But I don't have an iPhone. Yes, my wife has one, and yes, we do use it for certain things. And we just recently went on a vacation to Los Angeles, and it was invaluable in terms of our GPS. Don't get me wrong. I partake in the technology revolution. I understand that. But not to the extent that it's an obsession or an addiction. As I said before, I'm not collecting stuff anymore. I'm collecting memories. And a lot of those memories I'm collecting, I'm taking some pictures. I'm recording a few things. But most of the things that I am collecting in terms of memories, I'm collecting as I experience them with my eyes and my mind so that they mean something. And yes, I will take a picture of something. I'm not above that. I'm not. This is not about priority or superiority, but it's about recognizing the importance of making a connection and a real memory that sticks with you, that you will remember, because half of these pictures that you take and half of these recordings that you record of wherever you're at, you're never looking at them. You never will, because they're not that important. I have no problems in recording the important moments, but not the whole thing. If you're going to a concert, you have to record the whole show. You're not going to watch another 2.5 hour show back again. Watch the show, experience the show, be moved by the music, make a connection with the performer, leave there feeling energized. Don't leave there feeling that you're one step removed and, I recorded it, look. And then you look at it for 2 seconds right after the show and you never look at it again. You don't show it to anybody and you damn well know it. Come on, folks. We're in a very interesting time here where our behavior is really, in my feeling at least, disconcerting. And people are getting addicted. And I've been screaming out in the woods on this. And everybody, like I said before, looks at me like, oh, you're stuck in the past. You're not. No, it's not about that. It's about, well, I guess, what's the word here? It's doing it in a manner that is balanced. You don't have to always be on your phone. You're not missing that much. You don't have to tell anybody where you're at 24/7. They don't care. You don't have to show off and say, look at me, I'm doing something cool and you're not. Because that's what this is all about. As I've said many times, the great invention, the great moment that Steve Jobs had in inventing the smartphone was not the technology of it. It was the psychology of it. What the smartphone did was validate and unleash and make acceptable our own narcissism. And that's in every human being. It used to be an attribute that we tried to quell. Today, we celebrate our narcissism. And that's the genius of Steve Jobs. And that's why the iPhone has taken off so amazingly in 11 years and become a cultural icon and has changed our behavior so quickly, because it's gone down to the core of us. Look at me. That's what we're all striving for, and that's what the iPhone does. It allows us to say to the world now, not just to our friends, but to the world, look at me. You know, the great actor Laurence Olivier one time was asked, why do you act, Sir Laurence? Why do you act? And he said 3 words, look at me. For all the productions and all the Hamlets and all the movies and all the talking about the craft and the challenges of acting and all these metaphysical and emotional connections, at the end of the day, he just boiled it down to its core. People become actors because they have a need to be seen and recognized. Look at me. And now our whole culture is look at me every moment. And it is an addiction. And I bring this up because I've been screaming, as I said, in the forest about this. And now I'm starting to see people realize that, say the things that I've been saying, but it's taken them a long time to get there. I've been on the outskirts here observing and watching and seeing this happen. Most people are just so involved in it, they can't see what's happening until they're beginning to somehow notice it in others, perhaps, or in themselves. Like, geez, maybe I am on this phone too much. And maybe I am being distracted. And maybe I almost did get into a serious car accident. Thank God I didn't, because I was texting. And I almost crashed into somebody. So maybe there's things like that going on. But people are beginning to take a step back. And I've always said, at least a couple of years ago, I said that the thing that I'm mad at Steve Jobs at, it's not for inventing the iPhone. It's for inventing the iPhone and then soon afterwards leaving the world. He unleashed this power and this invention on us, and then he left us to deal with it And I don't think we've done a lot. I don't think we've done good things with the iPhone. Yes, there are moments when it's helpful. I said GPS, calling people. You know, people have been able to videotape, you know, terrible things, you know, crimes. I understand that. There are those moments. But overall, most people's heads are buried in their phones and they're doing nothing except they're bored. Talk to somebody. Look around, enjoy your atmosphere. Look around and just enjoy your environment for the sake of it. What do you do? I love to read most people's faxes, or texts, I mean. I love to read as I see them all furiously typing away and looking at things. I'd love when you see what they're looking at, cats playing the piano, or they're texting to their friends saying, oh my gosh, I'm bored. Yeah, that's real important stuff. And they said, Steve Jobs unleashed this on our culture, and then he left. He wasn't here to steward it. He wasn't here to marshal it, to take care of it, and to perhaps even help us in our addiction. He may have even known. I wonder if he would have, if he really would have imagined the way. I mean, he saw the popularity of it, but I don't think he has seen the way that we have become obsessed with it. And I think that if he was alive, because while he was a great inventor, I think he was also altruistic enough to say, he may have come out at one point and actually said, okay, folks, it's time to take a step back. And he was is probably the only one who would have the credibility to do that, since he created it. I don't know if you watched the show Westworld, but it's almost like the Anthony Hopkins character, the man who created this technology for this Westworld, and it ran amok, and he's kind of the conscience of it. And Steve Jobs could have been the conscience of the iPhone and maybe helped change our obsession and our addiction to it as a culture and as the world. But now, you know, everyone else is just finding ways to exploit the technology, even Apple itself. But Steve Jobs, because he invented it, may have had the credibility, may have been the only person with the credibility to show people the error of their ways, and they actually listened to him because he's the guy who invented it. I don't know if he would have. I don't know if he could have. But sadly, we'll never know because he passed away and never really got a chance to see where his invention was going, because he may have been able to step in here and make a detour, both with the technology as well as our behavior. And that's what I've been sort of saying. It's, as I said, it's kind of one of those, oh, gee whizzes. But I was happy to see in the newspaper recently, and when is this from? About a month or so ago, Apple unveils tools to curb iPhone habit. When I saw this story, there was like a choir of angels. I said, wait a minute. Maybe Apple, who's made a ridiculously amount of money on the iPhone, even they, who have every right to keep exploiting it and keep making new apps to get people addicted to the phone, so they'll keep buying them and keep buying the new editions, and they keep updating a new edition every 10, you know, year and a half or year or even shorter than that. I mean, what's that all about? That's commerce, folks. They are improving that phone so you buy another $800 one next year. I don't know if Steve Jobs, I mean, yes, he was an entrepreneur. He was a capitalist in every sense of the word. But he was also, as I said, he was kind of a citizen of the world, and he was altruistic. And I wonder if he would have just been as capitalistic as most companies are, of just trying different ways to squeeze as much money out of this iPhone as they can. I would like to believe that Steve Jobs may have had a little more worry about mankind in general, because he was that kind of guy. And maybe he would have put the brakes on this, or at least, as I said, had the credibility to come out and say, this is not what I intended. We'll never know. But clearly, it's becoming a problem. And Apple itself, and I applaud Apple, because they have every reason not to do this. And who knows if this will even catch on, because, I don't know, the addiction may be too rooted and too ingrained in us by now, especially the younger generation. They grow up now with this. But in June, it said that Apple introduced new controls for limiting how much time consumers or customers can spend on their devices, as the company tackles criticism that its devices are becoming increasingly addictive and distracting. My goodness, It's exactly what I've been talking about for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years. It's taken that long. I've been a voice in the forest here. The controls allow users to set do not disturb modes on their phones, such as at night or during trips to the playground with their kids. During that time, app notifications will be blocked from showing up on the home screen. The phone's screen can also be set to dim automatically just before bedtime. Apple will also give users reports on how much time they have actually spent on their different apps and on their phone, and what gets them to check them constantly. They can set time limits on specific apps and set controls for their kids. So, and Google is even getting into this too, revealing plans for the Android phone to go into a shush mode when placed face down at a table, and have the screen show only grayscale colors late at night. The goal here is to wean people off and to actually spend quality real time with your family and friends, as opposed to always documenting them, as I said before, on recordings that you will never watch. And it is a paradox, but it's something that I give Apple credit for, because they're actually introducing a software that will help to perhaps impede people from using their iPhone as much, when at the same time they're introducing new versions and trying and motivating people to get a new phone and use their phones more. But someone has to be the arbiter here. Somebody has to do it, because the government certainly isn't. So I give these companies actually some credit. That while they're being capitalists, and they have no problem with that, making new, improving upgrades and making the, and pushing the technology forward, that's fantastic. But I think they do have a responsibility, because nobody expected people's behavior to change this drastically and this fast with the iPhone. But it has, folks. It has. Think of yourself. Think of how much time you're on that phone. Think of how much time you're always checking that phone. Think about how much time your head is buried in that phone. And think about, what did I do 20 years ago when I didn't have this technology? Maybe I was talking with my friends and family. Maybe my head was up and observing life. There was a time, you know. And it is an addiction. So I applaud Apple. Whether this will be a popular app and whether this will be a popular software and people will try to curb their use, who knows? As we all know, we are an addictive society. We are an addictive species. I don't know if it can be done, but at least the industry and places like Apple that invented the smartphone are trying and making an effort at self-policing. Because clearly people don't have the ability to police themselves. And so I'm glad to see that Apple is doing that. Because once again, without Steve Jobs here, Apple is the one that really has to do this. Because that was the company that forged this technology and put it out here on the world. And we've seen what happened. Don't get me wrong, as I said before. Their technology and the iPhone have some amazing uses. And I am continually impressed by what you can do. That GPS technology is truly amazing. So yes, I partake in it, but it doesn't dominate my life like it dominates so many people's. That phone is almost melded to their hands. I was at this Dodger game a couple of weeks ago. My wife and I went to Los Angeles. I went to a Dodger Cub game. Great game. Javi Baez hit a grand slam. It was that game. And a friend of mine knew I was coming to the game, and he texted me during the game. So my phone went off, and I picked it up. And he, asking, are you at the game? And I said, yes, And so I'm texting back, and, we're going back and forth. And this guy sitting next to me sees me on the phone, on my flip phone. And I don't even pay attention to it that much, but I don't think it's that much of an oddity. But when people see me on my flip phone, especially, I don't know, in the last several months, I've been getting more people going, wow, look at you and your flip phone. I noticed you have a flip phone. Everybody's noticing it now. At first, they're making fun of me like I was so out of date and out of, you're not with it, Jim. You're not making the scene. But this guy who was around my age goes, I saw you on your flip phone. Was that a flip phone? I said, yes. And he said, wow, do I envy you. And I said, why is that? And he said, because you're not buried in your phone. He said, and he noticed, he goes, you're actually watching the baseball game. I said, yeah. He goes, I noticed you, you know, you're texting there, but, you know, you haven't been buried in it. And I saw you just texting very quickly and you're done and you've just been watching the game. He said, boy, I'm so addicted to my phone right now. I envy you. I'm really tempted to get one of those. I really need to do that. And I'm not trying, as I said, I'm not trying to be some big role model. I'm just using for what I think is good for me. I don't need to be obsessed with this thing. But more people now, thankfully, are recognizing in their own lives how obsessed and addicted they are to these things. And they see me with my flip phone like a horse and buggy as opposed to jumping in a car or in a rocket. And they're actually looking at me and saying, wow, that's amazing you can do that because I'm addicted to my phone. The only way to solve a problem, folks, is to recognize it first. So take a little stock in yourself. And maybe with these, are you obsessed? Are you addicted? Is it time for you to maybe slow down and do this, what they're talking about? Just have some time within your day where you don't touch your phone? Or do we need things like Apple and Google to create new technologies and new applications that help us, like Nutrisystem or Jenny Craig with weight loss? Do we need apps out there to help wean us off our addiction, not to food, but to our iPhones? Something has to be done because we're going down a bad road here, and I'm really glad to see that Apple and Google are realizing that there is a problem here. They've got everything to gain by letting this addiction go wild. But I applaud them for maybe taking a step back. And while they're still continuing to innovate and they're still continuing to upgrade and they're still continuing to entice us with the latest upgrades or the newest iPhone that can do this, that, and this, and that, I guess there is a conscience there too now. Is they're seeing some of the detriment that this amazing device can do. And they're beginning to finally take some responsibility and maybe help those users experience life firsthand and not experience it through a 7-inch screen. And so that concludes episode 113. Of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic here at WGN Plus. Every Monday, a new episode is posted. I am here on business. I'm only here for fun. Thanks for joining me. You've been listening to Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.